All right. Are y'all
Yeah.
ready to start?
Yeah. Let's do this. I'm
Cool.
so psyched. I'm so pumped. I'm
Yes.
ready.
That is evident.
Can you not see the energy? Ugh.
Ready, set, go.
Oh.
Welcome, Shifties.
Shift hit the fan.
Sure did.
And this episode, we're gonna make yawning great again.
There you go.
Just in case someone needs to yawn.
Or sleep. I just thought of our shift hit the fan, the little image that we have of the two little creatures looking up at the fan and just looking at it in wonder.
The little dragon one, the one that was AI generated.
Yeah.
That was really cute.
It was cute. It is cute.
Yeah, I wonder what's gonna happen today.
I
We
don't know
shall
where I
see.
put that little image.
Yes,
And
super
you
cute.
get to be the dragon today, looking up at the fan.
I get to be the dragon every day. I get to
Especially
be
today.
both dragons, a double dragon here, double dragon with double dragon upgrades.
Yes.
And that's what I have to rest for so that it can all integrate. Integration. Come on, let's
Da,
integrate.
da,
We'll
da.
have a good time. Who's got the cards? Me,
We've
silence.
got three beautiful cards. We've got the High Priestess, the Wheel of Fortune, and the Ten of Cups. There you go. Kind of got an image there. There's the High Priestess sitting on her throne of divinity, feminine divinity. And we've got the Ten of Cups there and the Wheel of Fortune. The Ten of Cups having two, or a couple, a male and a female, above this abundance of cups, this flowing abundance. And then going back to the Wheel of Fortune, we just have the Wheel of Fortune with the sword behind it and snakes at the bottom. There's a moon and a sun at the top, right? Actually, we don't know if
Yeah.
it's a sun, but it looks like a sun to me. It could be a flower.
Yeah, and there's a moon in the sun
Could be
above
the snakes.
or what it looks like that moon in the star, I guess, above the high priestess.
The High
Okay.
Priestess I see as this picture that is sitting on her throne of divinity, this creative force, being able to call in her manifestations, the things that are in her heart, being able to call and draw upon the energy of the universe, the mysteries of the universe, this dark, creative, and almost destructive force being led by the universe, and both of the universe and her own heart and mind. And then the way we've got it lined up in the Discord chat that we've got is, so the next one's the Wheel of Fortune. So to me, she's sitting on this Wheel of Fortune, this place of making choices and having the outcomes not necessarily be predictable. And in this, we have the sword, which to me represents a kind of a structure, a force that can be held. And then the snakes, that to me is a this choice, this the path that leads to choice, that and that choice leading to knowledge and experience. And then you have the sun and the moon, which again is kind of the masculine and feminine balance there. And then we have the Ten of Cups, where we've got the male and female joined together in kind of this divine manner, sitting above this abundance of cups. And to me, it says that sitting in our own creative throne requires both making choices, and that which gives us the experience and knowledge, but also being able to have a balance of our of the structure of the masculine, while we have the creative and somewhat destructive force of the feminine, being able to continually flow through that structure and evolution to draw in the manifestations of our heart. I kind of summarize it. What do you guys have to add to it? Or what are your deviations from that?
The part I like to add to that beautiful picture, and I know this doesn't show it, but not at all. You don't
We'll put it in
know.
the Discord and have it
Okay.
scattered around for
All
people to see.
right. Oh yeah,
And
it shows up
Instagram, you
much a
can.
little better there. But there's, yeah, you do want to go look at it because there's so many gorgeous like depth and design and just really fully honoring who she is. And you didn't mention her painted face, but it's a white face and the eyes are blackened out. But to me, that too represents the connection to being here in this realm while accessing all the power of the, you called it the mystic call. And that's actual the representation. It's just like so much mystical representations on here that make it so beautiful. And then what I also see is the realism that comes forth from her, even the carpet in front of her that says her title, the High Priestess. There's more clarity there. There's the pomegranate, and it's like she, maybe she's at the veil, you know, maybe she's at the veil that's so sheer. And there's clarity on this side that she partakes in this realm and also brings the mystical to the mystery of life. And that's where I want to leave that.
I like the way that it's lined up in the Discord chat too, and I love that you pointed out her face in this first one. So the way that I saw it when I initially looking at the High Priestess, and then you look at her mat there, and then that, it's like the
Yes.
mat coming out, and then we get to
Yes.
see a different version of how that takes shape. And then this also connects to the lovers, what's underneath it all. And for me, this has got the sun and the moon, so the moon is connected up above, and then the sun is connected to what's below this card. What I saw was with the High Priestess, it's sort of that, just the imagery, everything, it's just lighting up what's in the shadows. And how I've And this is after listening to you both, what's been made more clear is that the things that I me making friends with monsters, my pursuit of what's in the shadows, and no matter how painful it is, I'm gonna be with it. I'm gonna hold it, I'm gonna send it love, I'm gonna be unconditional with it. So that's sort of how the image is showing up. It's like when you actually spend time in the shadows, in the moon, and what's hidden inside of that, it's actually really beautiful and powerful. And I love that her face, this is where this connected to the Ten of Cups for me, because you zoom into her, and I said I thought she looked like Morticia a little bit in that image. So it's just like that's connecting the High Priestess to the Ten of Cups. So it's the sun, the moon, and how it comes together in this, the Wheel of Fortune, the unknown, the it's the choices. I love that it's got a sword in there, because it's almost like your thoughts are what is going to point to where the Wheel of Fortune goes. It's like your thoughts are going to make whatever it is. If you're coming from the observer, the High Priestess, your highest self, if you're taking into consideration the knowledge that's coming at you from both directions, the two snakes, and that I noticed right now are actually looking outwards. Initially, I had said that, you've got a snake for each ear, and you've got, if you don't have the discernment, you're just going to be reckless with the information. You're going to be reactive. You're going to be, I guess, I don't know, ignorant just keeps coming to mind, right? It's like you're not coming from a place of being grounded in yourself, which is what the Ten of Cups is showing. Is it's like an evolution of the lovers, because you've done the work to come from. Because if you look at the lovers, they're each looking at each other's chest, or what I said, I made that mean it's the heart. They're looking at each other's heart. So you're in love with the heart. They're holding hands. They've got all their cups perfectly stacked, but it's like it's an elevated because they've got the wings. They've got this is the inner masculine, the union of the masculine and the feminine within. And so this is all just a picture of yourself, the self that is constantly working on themselves and knowing how to discern, knowing how to observe themselves from the position of the higher self, right? As well as that lower self, the self that's here on earth, embracing both. I think it's a really, really powerful combination of cards that we have that I see in there. And yeah, that's all I got for right now. I'm fading a little
Wow,
bit.
that's awesome. Makes me definitely go back to the first one of the priestess, because you not only see the star and the sun and the moon above, but all behind her, it's the whole entire universe, like also again clearly depicted. And then here it's nicely side by side, like you're saying, pointing to as a balance. And the balance that you described also with the snakes, I was saying, because there for me, snakes are transmutation. Then it's like the zero point, it's the neutrality of the two, which is from where you may want to discern and make your choices. Let's say that is where we come to at our best. And remember, you also said this card, when you looked it up, meant trust. And I think that that encompasses the trust that we have by being fully who we are for ourselves. So I love that. And then the Ten of Cups, I didn't see it. It's so interesting because I didn't see it as the balance of the two. I'm looking at it from partnership, because I'm in a relationship long term, 50 plus years. And that's from where I was looking, and from where you're describing, for it to represent both sides of us. I do love that as well. Because once again, these cards, for me, he's represented not just the masculine, but it includes feminine elements. Like he has a presence that includes his feminine too. And I don't know that we often come across that. And I am speaking because of my age and how generations are showing up differently for me now. So when I look at them as a partnership, yes, it's angelic because of the wings, but they're absolutely relying on each other. Not maybe relying, maybe stretching, but there's support for one another, let's say strength within that partnership, and the bounty of that is those cups. And then, since we were looking a little deeper, because we can digitally and open it up and see the details, the stages in the relationship are represented above them. And that is when they've come together. And then that is when I want to say he's in service to her. So it's like the masculine, it's a time for the masculine to be in service to the human. Again, within us too, within men and within women. And then they have the rebirth of the new one. I wanted to say, we could say repercussion, we could say the reproducing. Just, oh, and the energy that I see behind in the background also of the Wheel of Fortune. I just appreciate when energy is represented. And that's what it is to me. It's squiggly lines, but for me, it's energy. And it's also spoken here by Elias as like thought patterns. It's all energy. Anyway, yes, beautifully balanced cards with one another, one leading to the other. So great. And encompassing all three.
I really like the thought with the the high priestess with like the universe being in the background. And it reminds me of what Rick Rubin has to say about creativity, with that there are ideas that are in the universe, that are in the outside of, on like on the greater grand scheme of consciousness, the collective consciousness. And if we don't pull in those ideas, if we don't allow those to come into our thoughts and our minds as they come, as they're called to us, then somebody else will, they'll go to somebody else. Somebody else will pull those. And so what I love is that in that depiction of the high priestess is that universe. It's the universal consciousness collective that she's allowing to flow through her. And I think to Avra's point, the darkness and the light and the dark contrast that's happening in here is beautiful, because there's a familiarity with the darkness, familiarity with those things that we hide in the shadows, and a light, a contrast where we bring light into those areas to say, oh, I see what these are. I'm no longer hiding from them. And yeah, they might be painful. They might be uncomfortable in some way, but at least we recognize and we've shown a light on them. And there's that light and dark difference is able to create the, is able to bring to life the creativity that we have inside of us, to create from, bring into existence what, from nothing, basically. But the nothing really is that light and dark contrast that exists inside of us. And so that's kind of what I was thinking of between what you two were had to say about the high priestess there.
Yeah, now I have a little bit more because you're like, yeah, we're reaching within us. And to me, it's like excavating the light within us, excavating the spirit light to come through and amplify that out of having accepted and neutralized that dark. Yeah, so then the light can get fully shine. And we need that. Well, we are that. We just are that. Yeah.
What I thought of as you both, had said your things, Elias talking about contrast and then Solma talking about the masculine and feminine, I thought of like Carl Jung idea of your masculinity informs your femininity. And this is where he was talking about people talking about masculine men and trying to find the feminine women, but nobody's talking about the people, right? If we only have men and women, where are all the people? And I was thinking about how we, because we lose the people in trying to find these certain what we think are masculine and feminine, but it's like the way that the feminine is portrayed in the Bible leaves people thinking that it's the woman is to blame, the man is weak, and should be able to learn to control the woman. The man has had to become destructive to be able to control the woman. But there's also that idea, in other sort of thought or beliefs that the female is the destructive, the destructive and creative, which sort of comes through in the high priestess face, painted white, black eyes, and as well as the Morticia looking face in the Ten of Cups, right? She has the ability to create and destroy as well. So it's like one of them is the source of destruction, and one of them is the reason for the destruction. So they're still in, sort of in union in that way. They're collaborating in that way, as well as one is the source of creation and one is the reason for, right? So they're also feeding into that. One of them has the seed, one of them has the thing that builds the creation, right? So you still have them together making one. And that's where it's beautiful. It's like you include the dark and the light without each other, it's nothing. Like Elias said, right? That's where I went with all that.
What you were saying there had made created this picture in my mind that I haven't thought of before, is in one light, in one way of seeing this, you could see the masculine as our own experience. Like that is the structure that we're sitting upon. That's the history that we're sitting on. And the feminine is this new experience that we're stepping into. And the way that I see, I love the snakes. The way that I see the snakes with the Garden of Eden, pulling it back to the Garden of Eden, the serpent who is tempting the feminine, or the tempting Eve, to partake of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. From the point that they're standing in, they are in the Garden of Eden. That is their experience. Everything is perfect. Everything's structured just the way they need to have it, and Adam is dedicated to staying in that realm, to following, to not partaking of the garden of good and evil, or the not partaking of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. And so Eve goes in and partakes of that fruit and creates a new experience from them where they're cast out of that garden. And so in that they're She's destroying the past experience, destroying the history that they've had, or the continuation of that history, the continuation of the pattern, and creating a new experience, creating a new realm, this place that has more suffering, more unknowns. And you talked about the snakes being transmutation, and that's kind of what I'm seeing it as, is these little voices, or this way of saying, hey, there are more options past what you've already experienced. Do you want to experience something different? Yes, you'll be stepping into the unknown. You'll be stepping out of your garden, your experience, your history that you've had up until now. And you're going to be gaining a lot more knowledge and experience past your old experience, past your old history, past the knowledge that you already have. And so that snake is kind of the path, the way of making choice, making something a choice that might be different than what we've made, than choices we've made in the past. So yeah, that was kind of what I was, the picture I got from that is the masculine being the history, the experience, and the feminine being a choice.
The result of discernment, I think, and what I was saying with the snake, it's like with every single thought, are you going to discern whether, this is good for me or bad for me, where it's coming from, which part of me is saying this? Because whatever it is that I'm thinking, if I dwell in it, if I don't have discernment, that thing is going to be what becomes made manifest. And you can splice it and shape it and do whatever. You have the sword, you have the thought. That's what's going to shape. That's where you are, the shift shaper, right? With you have the one sword. You don't need more than that, especially when you have discernment, because that's, yeah, you can cut up whatever it was that was given to you, the narrative that was, because we all come in with a narrative already pre-existing for us. It's all written into our cells, our makeup. We get to decide and determine what we continue to perpetuate or put out into the future and make manifest. I love that.
Here's a further thought on that too, is that discernment might be something that's past the good and evil. We might think that this discernment is, oh, that's bad for me, or that's good for me. But what if discernment is questioning our reaction to say that's good or bad? And I think that's something that I've gotten into with stick work, is when I'm going through that pain or that suffering, and I'm saying, oh, I want to avoid this pain. I want to avoid the suffering. That would be me holding on to my past experience and saying, I don't want to, I want to keep the protection that I've had against experience something new. What if that's not really a bad thing? What if I can question the pain and suffering and discomfort and say, oh, it's just sensation. It's just an experience that I'm having right now. And then can that open our eyes up to see more past just avoiding the bad and or the uncomfortable and only trying to experience the good? Not to say that we're not going to make a choice to say, yeah, I prefer this over that. We still have to make choices, but perhaps that discernment is questioning good versus evil.
Well, also, why do I say the pain and discomfort is bad
Yeah.
versus, how do I know?
Oh.
How do I know this is bad? Like the story that you've told a few times of the farmer and his son, right? And the things that have happened to his son, or the fortune that he either receives or doesn't, and he just was like, "Well, we'll see. We'll see how this if this is good or bad." Go
Yeah,
ahead, son.
this might be something that makes me suffer now, but maybe it's leading to something better later on.
Which in the moment that we're questioning it, though, it's because of fear. If I'm in this much pain now, I don't want to go further. It could be worse. There's the fear of that. It's not just the unknown. It's accompanied by fear, not just of the unknown, but that it will worsen. And often it does.
Well, and what's the fear of the unknown? We don't have a fear of the unknown. You can't fear something that you don't know. You're fearing a past projection into the unknown. You're fearing your own past, your own experience, rather than fearing something that hasn't, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, the fear is based on the past, yeah, and you
Well,
can't base it on the future,
yeah.
but
Well,
we're expecting the past again because that's all we know,
I beg to
right?
differ. As somebody who's, had memory loss, has lost certain, skills, my one of the fears that I've been confronting and looking at is, what the heck am I going to do when I'm well? Because what it seems like, if I don't have skills, it's if I don't have the things that I used to rely on, if I don't have my memory, what am I going to do with my life, right? Who's going to take me with this long gap of nothing? What am I going to create? What skills do I even have? I don't have the same skills that I used to have. And even now, I mean, and this is, I know it's like there's no excitement of going into a future because there's no certainty. Can I rely on a brain that's only half there, right? I used to think it would be great to have a blank slate, to be an empty canvas, until I had memory loss, and I was like, oh, this is not as fun as I thought it would be. this is not. I do not recommend. 0 out of 5 stars. Would not do it again.
But I think with that, you're still fearing something that you know, the concepts that are inside your own mind. If you didn't know that you don't have skills, or you didn't know that you don't have a certain layout, then there'd be nothing to fear. You just step into it and experience it, experience something new.
And there can be excitement in the unknown, because that's where discovery and exploration come in. And there's an eagerness out of what else? Like, I'm done with this, or like my word recently is I've been tolerating this and not knowing where to go with it. And so just being with that, which is the other part about the future, that it can be unknown. Oh, it's going to rhyme, but we can be willing to be shown.
I think it's, to me, I think of a child. We talk about bringing out our own inner child and bringing out and being more childlike in the way when a child enters into the world, they don't know anything. They're developing those concepts, and so they don't have a fear of trying new things unless they've been punished for something or they've felt the pain of a certain experience. And so that certain experience will make them hesitate, or will make them question, or make them question their own judgment, instead of just stepping in and playing with whatever it is that they have. Oh, I have this curiosity about this new toy. What does it do? I want to see what it does. And they pull it apart, they break it because they're just curious about what is this thing that they have. And there's no thoughts of failure. There's no thoughts of there's something bad's going to happen to it until something bad happens, and then they learn that experience. They learn that, oh, that made me uncomfortable. And I think that's something that I have become careful of as a parent, is to say, my kids are having this experience right now. Can I help them bring awareness rather than help them then say, this is bad, and punish them? I don't want to be the consequence for them. I want them to learn what is it like to feel these things, to say these things, to act in this different way. And they do that anyways. They know that if they push my buttons, they get attention. And maybe that's the negative attention in some way, but hey, they got my attention. They wanted that interaction. And so they figure out, hey, I'm going to push all these buttons until I get what I want. And I think in the same way, if we can step into that and let go of our past concepts, the past experience in history, or that really it's just the past concepts, the past structure that we've created around our experiences in history. If we can let go of that and just step in with a space of curiosity, what can I do? What abilities do I have in this moment? Not what am I limited by? And this is actually something that came up in some of the design stuff that I have in my job. They were talking about writing requirements for new projects. And they said this guy said that if you start out with your constraints, you're going to be stifled and you'll never get anywhere with your design. But if you can start out with what do you want? What is it that you want to create? Like, what is your hopes and aspirations? If you can start out with that and then start forming these ideas and the design around those, around the desires, and then the constraints will just say, oh, well, that's not possible, and this isn't possible. But then you haven't limited yourself by the constraints. You've broadened your imagination out. What is it that I can experience? What is it that I can bring into existence? What's the possibilities? Where does my imagination take me? And then you figure out your limits along the way.
They'll show up. But what else? What else is possible?
I keep thinking about, sure, that's a great example for a kid who doesn't have any responsibilities to maintain a family, right? What happens to the kids who do have that pressure, who are the ones that have to go out and make the money? Thinking of kids in Mexico, or the kids in that are being oppressed all over the world right now, who do have that, have either they've lost their parents, or their parents are disabled in some capacity, and they're the ones that have to take care of it. You don't have that same curiosity and wonder. That kid goes to work and has the weight of the world, and they grow up to be somebody, usually not somebody who's very successful, but somebody who's living paycheck to paycheck, like my dad. was, right? Who was put to work at a very young age. And that's the stuff that I'm carrying with me. So it's not just my stuff. I don't have that. He didn't have the childlike wonder. He would get beat and stuff like that, right? So it's learning how to restore that from getting trying to reconcile the two children within the one that got beat down, the one that you're carrying that you've inherited, and then learning how to have the inner child that wasn't beat down teach the other kid how to play, right? So there's a lot of healing that needs to be done. It's not always so easy unless you didn't go through those experiences, right? I just kept playing over. I've been thinking a lot about my dad lately and why he is the way that he is, and how much I would have loved to just observe that kid, and the stories that he tells. I just love, we've always loved hearing his stories because of how wild they are, and how, just like to experience a kid that he used to just like make his own slingshots, and he was such a great shot. He would be able to break a flying bird's wing if he wanted to keep it. This is how good of a shot he was. Just to know him at, that's what I want to like get more into the thinking of the child, and especially a child like my dad, because I know that's what's in here. That's the weight that I'm carrying. It's not just the fear of the unknown for myself, but how can I reconcile that with what I know, having even more a keener look into that? It's just bringing that even more discernment into what makes us how we are. I think last week I talked about how my insane reflexes, and now I know that I get them from my dad. It's almost like a remembering of who you are. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that what you're pointing at is something that is, it's a hard thing to grapple with when we start talking about manifestation and we start talking about abundance and this life of freedom that we tend to try to portray or that we tend to project into the world or that we can often feel. One of my big things is that one of my big concepts that I've created for myself is that abundance is here. It's right now. It's the experience of life itself. But for so many people, that experience is a experience of suffering, of limitation, of lack of freedom. And I think something that I've come to look at, especially in my own experience, is that these concepts that we create as individuals, as cultures, are ways of protecting us against that discomfort, against those who oppress us, or that there are certain limitations and protections that we create within ourselves. And there's a balance between keeping some of that protection and looking at those concepts and looking at that protection that's inside of ourselves and saying and questioning, do I need that right now? Is that serving me in a way that is beneficial? Do I want to be daring and try something different? And so there's definitely that balance. And whenever I see, for me, having experienced my own protections and having looked at my own shadows and finding what's serving me right now and what's not serving me has really helped me look at other people, the people that I see that are having bad, negative, or what I would consider bad, negative behaviors or behaviors that I don't agree with. And then coming to an understanding of there's a reason that they're doing that. There's a reason that they are behaving in the way that they are, and it's because their experience is different than mine. There's something inside of them that has said, I need to act in this way to protect something that's valuable to me. There's something that I don't want to experience, or there's something that I'm protecting from, and this is the way that I need to act. And so for me, it's built in this beautiful understanding of people and how we operate and why we choose the way we choose. Even if I don't fully understand all those different things, all those different reasons why we choose those, it at least gives me that understanding that there is a reason behind, there's an intelligence behind every decision that somebody makes, whether it's conscious or unconscious, whether they're aware of it, aware of their full capabilities or not. And I think that's what, for me, manifestation and this alchemical work of this alchemical shadow work is to bring awareness to our full capabilities and what we are actually capable of doing in our own life.
I think that totally, this is almost a demonstration of the work that is shown in the cards, right? That discernment, the what it takes to work through the certain fears or inherited conversations that we have already programmed into us, things that we don't even know why we think the way we think about certain things, like the dice player. I played no part in who I am or who I've become, right? Because, if any one thing would have changed in our timeline and how we've gotten to where we are this day, if I wasn't in my car accident, if I didn't have this injury, would I still be the same person? Right? It's like the universe is shaping me, but where did my thinking come from? Right? And that these specific things had to happen to somebody who had my thinking, because this wouldn't have worked with just anybody, right? So these happenings are catered just towards us, and I have the discernment that a lot of people wouldn't have under these circumstances, right? So there's that, right? So it's like it's all just, yeah, I think that was a really good display of the discernment, the things that we do need to bring, because it's not always as easy as whatever you focus on. Like, be getting into that childlike wonder and all that. That, sometimes it's work. Sometimes it is looking into that, like what's hidden that's keeping me from bringing that childlike wonder to everything and to trusting in who I am and knowing myself. Because if I don't inspect, if I don't discern, if I don't observe, I don't know me. And I'm just ignoring all of the stuff. I'm just suppressing, I'm pushing it aside. I'm trying to get into possibility on top of all of this stuff that's never been looked at. And then, why does manifestation work for certain things, but not for the things that I really, really want, or for harder things? Why do I think there are harder things? Why? It's like we have all the answers within, and
I hear it's asking different questions. Why has never been a helpful one for me. So it's not clear enough. And I just wasn't a question asker. And I did begin to ask different questions. And out of increasing meditation, and so then that's different than just reflecting and pondering, because pondering in that joyful wonder, for me, that's manifestation. I mean, it'll be completely innocent. I'll wonder, oh, I wonder about this and that. Next day, there it is. In a sense, that's a better question, even though it's not even phrased like a question. And so I did ask, what is stopping me from moving forward in this commitment that I have? And the next morning, there was an article for me to look at in my on my phone, like first thing in the morning. And that's happened multiple times. So it's asking the deeper questions that have more to do with the answers, like you were suggesting, coming from what you want. When you have the clarity of what you want, then those clearer questions come up. And when I would be wondering, not Not, I wouldn't call that wondering. Well, I would be more in a worried state and not know it because I don't know myself as a worrier. And I would not even know that I was making myself wrong, had gotten into a pattern of making myself wrong, which is kind of like a first thing because I was brought up with so much criticism. And then meditation, transformation, coming along, not having that pattern anymore, practicing, following and magic and all of that. And then life happens. And then my reaction comes back like that. And I don't know it, catch it, I'm not aware of it, whatever. And those instances, like with happen the most with family. I mean, to me, that's that's where the automatic comes up like that. My daughter just visited. We cleared up something great before she visited, but it doesn't take any little thing that she says for me to really go, like, react. And how do I not react? Like, know that, okay, there's that reaction. Okay, what else is available right now? Then the work begins, right? And the speaking up of, like, see, what did she say this time that was simple? She goes, well, why do you care about it, what I think? That's a very clear question. And I'm like, oh my God, she's giving me a clue.
Did she ask why?
She did, but it's not me asking why.
Yeah,
What
but
me
if we're
asking
getting
me why, I can't ask that
right,
for
if we're
myself.
getting into the childlike wonder, though, they ask why. Why?
My childlike wonder is the why, innocently, and I don't say why. So that's why. That's why I'm saying it that way. So she says, why does it matter? And I'm like, I don't say anything. I just go off and I'm kind of like, okay, that's a good question. I'm gonna, go around with that. And then I went, okay, if it doesn't matter, I bought a little sound drum, steel sound drum, and I took it and just went off by myself. And I was out by the garden area and just played and played and played and played. And then I walked in after I was done. It was about 15 minutes. And I don't know how to play. It was really, really playing with it, playing at playing and hearing the tones, which is what I loved. And then when I walked by him, she goes, oh, something like, oh, you were playing the drum. And I go, yeah, it was fun. And then that was that. And we were good. So that doesn't mean that I still didn't deal with my own self on that, whatever she says and how I react. Because that is absolutely from my childhood, not from her childhood, from mine. So anyway, there's all that discerning and stuff to do on the spot. And it's, I use again family because that's the one that's takes me out the quickest. We can be the other, she did say too, this is the second time she said this, like in a year, you're not my friend, you're my mother. And to me, that's not okay with me, but it, for her, it's nothing. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought of how for me it's I don't necessarily want to go from what I want, even though that's what I said. I'm looking at why does this trigger me? Looking at what triggers me more so, because that's what I'm interested, because there's something hidden in that. So it's like spending all this time in the moon. I kind of look like the moon right now, more than death.
That's a death place, I would say. I mean, I've asked those questions a long time, and so that's at this point I'm asking what is hidden? And yeah.
Yep,
So they're
that's what I want to
all,
know.
those are
What's hidden?
valid.
What is hiding in this? Why am I triggered by this? Who's being triggered? It's not just the why, it's all of them. Where did this come from? When did it start?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Unclear about that part. For me, anyway, go ahead.
I see why as a logic question. And so kids that are starting to ask why, they're starting to realize that there's logic in the world, that there's reactions to different things. And I've started to see logic as illogical, meaning that when we are trying to put logic together, they are patterns that we have formed in our own mind to connect the dots for why, to try to understand the reactionary step. But again, it comes back to they're just the concepts that we've created in our mind, and they're a lot of times they're limited in a lot of ways. And so I love that question of what, and just trying to bring it down to the simple form of, well, what happened? What exactly happened? Like, what did I sense? And then from that sense, oh, I reacted in this way. And we've stated this, I think, a few times that in the past, where we say, once you know something, then it's a choice. Like, then your behavior, once you recognize a behavior, it's a choice after that. And I've found that to be almost like I almost don't agree with that completely, because just because you have awareness of it doesn't always mean that your body is in the same realm of being able to choose against it. But it brings awareness so that you can start to recognize, oh, maybe I want to try something a little bit different. And so it can start to lead us outside of that choice that we, that behavior that we've created, or that behavior pattern that we've created within ourselves, and start to help us move in that direction. But a lot of times we can't, it's hard to condition ourselves out of those conditioned behaviors that we have within us. And so it's not always completely a choice, but it does start provide the, it does open the door to start creating a choice in a lot of ways. And so I think what I start to see with it, and what I see with the work that, especially with my mentor, he really takes, because cognitive behavioral therapy, especially with like psychologists, they're always looking at the why. And well, not always. A lot of them have looked in the past have looked at why is this happening? So we explore these mental thoughts and breakdowns, but then we forget that there's a what. There are these sensations and behaviors that are within us that we also have to interact with. And there might be a why behind the unconscious behavior or be unconscious sensations. But if we break it down into, oh, I'm just feeling this. I'm having these senses right now. Can I calm my nervous systems to react in a different way? And so it kind of changes it a little bit to outside of the concept and deals with the direct interaction with truth and existence of, this is how I'm sensing and perceiving this direct experience of life. And it just goes kind of past the why in a lot of ways. The why is really helpful, and I think it's a an important and helpful concept in a lot of ways. But we still have to deal with, my body's reacting in this way, and I've got to figure out a way to calm my nervous system so that I can make that choice, so that I can see it differently, so that I'm not continuously just fearing this and blaming this external thing on my internal behavior on this external input.
I think that speaks to, like,
Excellent.
for why is like, for me, part of the process is that why gets me back to the kid who's asking the question, right? It immediately takes me to the source, and I'm pretty quick at finding the source of the suffering or the trigger or whatever it is. And I think that maybe it's why, it's because it bring, because I know that's part of the process, right? It's
Yes.
not necessarily how I'm looking at it from an adult perspective, but I want to get myself into the thinking of that child who made it up, who
Yes.
made up the issues to understand how she got to that conclusion and what she needs from my grown up me to get her through that in a way that she can understand.
Yeah, however I said it, for me, it's like I find it wasn't useful for me anymore. I don't know that I ever asked why, because like you're saying, though, you kind of instantly go there. I'm used to, maybe that's even part of the skill of why, of like how quickly do you find it, you know? And so I think the intuition around that was in place to where I didn't necessarily have to ask why, but it'd take me there. And then once there, though, let's say many years of just continuing to have reaction. My daughter's an example. It happened different ways. And it's also for me discerning that crying was a tool for me. It's a tool that's worthy to honor. But as a child, it was because I knew I couldn't do anything about it. I knew it'd be just there. And now at this point, years later, even using it to help other people, it's like, no, what are the parts that are left that I'm, when that trigger happens, I can see what's next because it's been many times over that I would just burst into tears there and not really know what to do with it myself, much less interact with whoever else, you know, I'm interacting with in the first place. So it wasn't, you know, like at least with my daughter, we can both be in that space of we know we're getting through this. Whether even if it's takes something for the communication to happen. And I also afterwards though is like I once she was gone on the airplane, I was like, got home and I was like, I cried and I thought, there is a part of this relationship that just is absolutely dead, you know? I mean, like is gone and it's to say goodbye to. And so I grieved for that. But again, I don't know what's next. And when you were talking about choice, I thought, you know what? Yes, it is helpful to have the knowledge. That only makes it available. And we might forget again and again and again, even though it's available. And then one time we'll remember, oh, it's available. I knew that. I got that. For however many times it takes. It's all part of it, the parts that work for us and the parts that don't, that we stay in and all of it. It's our path. I for me that is developing compassion. Yeah, go ahead.
And all we're doing is just experiencing this life and
Yes.
experiencing all the different sensations and combinations of sensations, and it's continually new and continually evolving, and I find it quite beautiful just to see how many different ways we can live in one body.
I think that was the blessing of those cards that we got today. It was like almost like the highest part of each. Very great.
I'm done.
Yeah, we're done. Awesome.
Well, shifties, that's what we got for you.
Hope we shifted some stuff and help clarify things and bring some light to the dark and some dark to the light.
All the
Yeah.
fun, different navigations of it all.
That's right.
As we shift along.
That's
Much
right.
love
And go be the shift.
I hope you
Be the
enjoyed this
shift.
shift.
I'd love to be the shift. That's the end of it, though.
That's some
Yeah.
good shift right here. All
That's
right.
right.
Okay. Love you. The end.
Love
Love
you,
you.
the end.